the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for February the 27th in the year of our Lord, 2021. Hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we're live for the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association Conference in Woodlands, Texas, CSPOA.org, to learn more and become a lifetime member, as I am. Highly recommend that to you. We now have an interesting sheriff with us. He's a new sheriff, by the way. His name is Randy Hargrove, and Sheriff Randy Hargrove is from Houston County, Texas. And let me get this straight for us non-Texans, sir. Houston County, Texas, Houston's not in the county, right?
No, sir, it's not. Crockett, Texas is the county seat of Houston County.
All right, there you have it. Crockett, Texas, named after Davy, I'm hoping?
It is named after Davy Crockett, and our county is named after Sam Houston.
You got to like that, right?
You bet.
Now, tell me, how long have you lived in the county?
Well, I'm a native of that county. I moved to South Texas in 1965, and I moved back into Houston County in, the mid-80s, I guess.
And how did you become sheriff? Have you been in law enforcement your whole life?
I have. Well, not really. I feel like I have, but I've been in law enforcement for about 24 years now.
Okay. And what did you do before that?
Well, I did a lot of things, Sam. I was in construction work. I tried my hand at sales. And then law enforcement for me became a calling, like a minister gets to a pulpit. It's not a career. It's not a job. But for me, it's a calling.
And tell me about that calling. Is it because of the people? Is it because of the rule of law? All of the above?
Actually, it's all of the above. It's just something I couldn't get away from. It kept pulling at me, and there's such a need for it. I've seen so many things in law enforcement, especially it's really brought it to light from this conference, looking at it from a constitutional view instead of a law enforcement view.
As you've been in law enforcement, has it been kind of a learning curve of how to behave as a sheriff or behave as really a servant of the people?
It is, and this is servanthood. We are charged to defend and protect and uphold the Constitution of the United States and of Texas, and that's part of the calling. The people need a defender, and in my county, I am that defender.
Now, when you say you are, how big is your county?
Well, we have, I think it's about 12 or 1,300 square miles. We have about 25,000 residents.
So it's huge.
There. It's a pretty good sized county.
All right. And did you work as a deputy for a long time before this or what?
I did. I worked as a deputy. And I'm glad you asked that. I worked as a deputy for 17 and a half years.
Wow.
And I retired to go to work for the Marshal Service in Lufkin. And during that hiring process, they had a hiring freeze on. So I put in for the position of investigator with the district attorney's office to get a little insurance to make sure I had a job, and ended up getting that job. And as a result, it worked out perfect for me to be able to run for sheriff of Houston County.
So tell people what a marshal is. When you say I was going to go be a marshal, what does that mean?
Well,
most of us are just thinking, hey, the marshals are on a plane, you know?
Yeah, right? Well, that particular job was going to be with the courts in Lufkin, Texas. I would have been basically a federal bailiff.
The reason I bring that up is because marshal's a pretty generic term depending on where you are and where you sit, and it's not really the same thing all over the place, is it?
That is correct. I mean, we have city marshals, we have air marshals, we have federal marshals, and they all have a different job to do, and none necessarily one in the same.
And some are constitutional, some are not.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. Well, now tell me about your county. You know, you've been in it for a long time, and I want to just discuss the evolution of, you know, they always, you know, my parents and grandparents said, you know, when we were in school, you know, our problem was, hey, tuck in your shirt tail and quit chewing gum and stuff like that. And nowadays it's like, hey, you know, the suicides and guns and death and drugs and violence and sex and all kinds of stuff. Have you seen that change over the years, and what do you think the cause is?
I have seen that change, and I think it's just part of the times, and the further we get from God, the more we see those kind of things happen in our county.
So you do think it's a God-related issue as well?
Most definitely.
How come then in the media and everywhere I go and people talk about, hey, we got this problem, we got this problem, we got this problem, they don't bring any of that up? If that's really the problem, then it's the solution too, right?
It is the solution, Sam. The further we get from God, the more we are left to our own devices, and we have trouble kind of taking care of ourselves when it comes to those kind of things. We depend upon ourselves and not Him.
Are you allowed to be godly in your position? You know, I've seen sheriffs across the country. Some of them are, you know, on their bumper stickers or their, you know, police vehicles or whatever else. They're like, this is God's country. Or sometimes they say, in God we trust or whatever else. And some sheriffs are taking a beating over this. But I think it's important to not separate religion from who we are, right?
It is extremely important. And we have in God we trust on our vehicles.
You do?
Yes, sir.
In God you trust, and then it's to protect and defend, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Wow. Is that allowed? Are people freaking out?
No, actually, we have a very conservative a group of folks there in Houston County. We have quite an array of demographics, but there's one thing in common, and that's most of the people in Houston County are God-fearing people, and they're good people.
How do you deal with feds coming into your county? You know, there's a big debate about this, and the CSPOA believes that, you know what, there's jurisdictional boundaries. And our enemies or our detractors lie and say, we think that the sheriff is like a god in a county. We don't think that by any means. What we do think is that the sheriff has tremendous executive responsibilities. And if you look at the checks and balances, there's, you know what, a DA, there's, so that's the kind of attorney. There's the county board or the county commission or whatever you want to term it. That's kind of the legislative body. And then you've kind of got the sheriff, which is kind of the executive equivalent to a governor or a president within a county. It's the checks and balances we're talking about. We don't think that the sheriff is a king, but we do think he has tremendous power. And we do think he has a jurisdictional reality in this county. And we do think that, you know what, all things must go through him. There needs to be coordination, and there needs to be respect, and there needs to be jurisdictional boundaries. And we do believe those things, Sheriff.
We do, and if we're going to make this thing work, we have to come together on common ground, and there's two areas of that common ground that I see. Number one, and that is Jesus Christ. The second one is the Constitution of our country and our state.
Are they respecting that in your county, and what happens when say, somebody says, I want to keep my business open? We've got a lady here right now by the name of Larvita McFarquhar. You probably saw her stand up with Richard Mack yesterday, right?
I did, and I visited with her. She's a very sweet lady.
Yes.
And she's going to be in our prayers. At my sheriff's office, myself, my assistant, and my chief deputy, we pray every morning. We meet in my office, and we pray every morning. And we're going to be praying for that lady that God sees her through this.
Well, what happens in your county if somebody does that? If they want to stay open, and the bureaucrats in the state saying, in my opinion, there should be interposition by the sheriff saying, listen, stop now. I know you state people think you have absolute control, but you don't. There are jurisdictional boundaries. I don't have absolute control either. But we need to come to the meeting of the minds on this, and we need to first, it's kind of like the doctor's creed in a way, first do no harm and say, look, how can we come together in a meaningful way to let her feed her family, feed her children, but at the same time, you know, strike a balance? There's ways to do it if we can coordinate, if we can talk it out, and if we can come to a kind of an understanding of what's proper and moral and right and legal. And I mean, you mix all that in a big old thing, shake it up, and come out on the other side and say, you know what? The whole purpose of government is to protect us.
That is correct, Sam. And so far we haven't had that problem in our county. We've had some folks that closed voluntarily.
Yeah, but they can do that. I'm okay with that too, sure.
But as far as someone coming in and making our people close up, it's not going to happen. We're going to defend the Constitution. We're going to defend the rights of the people. And I just have to say one thing. After this conference, I spoke with my chief deputy, and on our policy manual and the descriptions of the deputies and different employees in our county, the very first item on that description is going to be to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States and of Texas.
Critical, ladies and gentlemen, vital. What about the IRS coming in, you know?
We haven't had any problem with that I know of, and I hope we don't, but I can tell you that I've had a fire lit in my soul coming to this conference, Sam, and the oath that I took before my people and before God, I have to uphold that, and I have to protect the citizens of my county, and that's exactly what I'll do.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to Randy Hargrove. He's the new sheriff in town. We're talking about Houston County, Texas. That's the county that does not have Houston in it, but it is Houston County. And I want to kind of articulate, we got a break coming up here in a second, Randy, if you don't mind.
Sure.
But Sheriff, and I want to kind of articulate how, in my opinion, a sheriff would respond to the IRS coming into their county.
You bet.
And I want to see your thoughts on it, see if what I'm saying makes any sense, if you think what I'm saying has a reality of doing it right. What I mean is, I think this is where the citizens and those people who they elect should discuss these things and say, you know what, is there a proper way forward? Some would say, hey, the sheriff just needs to kick the IRS out and melt down, and you know, and some would say, no, wait a minute, the sheriff needs to cater to the IRS. Who are you talking about? This is the federal government. And I don't think either are true.
No, I don't think so.
All right. I don't think either are correct. I think both of them are extreme. Both of them is the reality of solutions when we coordinate, solutions when we work together, solutions when we talk it out, solutions when we say what is the proper role of constitutional government. And that's really what I want to kind of get to with regards to this. I want to talk about ways forward. And believe it or not, that's what sheriffs are doing right now with public officials at the CSPOA conference. They're talking about what are the ways forward? How do we do this? And sheriffs feel kind of caught in the middle. We need to change that, ladies and gentlemen, because they shouldn't be caught in the middle. There should be ways forward that make sense for all of us. We'll talk about that in seconds with Randy Hargrove. He's the new sheriff in town, Houston County, Texas, on your radio.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Well, my mom smokes and my dad smokes, and I saw them smoking, so I tried it. They're telling me not to smoke, but they smoke themselves.
When it comes to smoking, are you sending mixed signals?
But when you teach someone a certain way to do things and you go back on that certain way, it sends mixed signals to the person that they're trying to teach. The parents need to be the example.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Regrets? Oh, we're all gonna have them. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do. At some point, you're gonna wish you'd done something differently. You know, the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But let me tell you a couple of things you'll never regret. You'll never regret spending extra time talking to your teenager. Trust me. You'll never regret answering your three-year-old's question about where the water in the bathtub comes from. And I've never seen anyone wish they hadn't sat in the kitchen laughing with their children and telling them goofy stories about when they were kids. Yeah, sure, we're all gonna have regrets, but talking too much with our kids won't be one of them.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen, Randy Hargrove Sr. I just found out on the radio. He is currently the new sheriff in town, sheriff of Houston County, Texas. And I want to paint a scenario for the good sheriff and kind of get his take. You know, some people say, just kick the IRS out, man, arrest them all. Somebody else says, wait a minute, hold on now, this is the federal government here, and you can't do anything to them, sheriff. They just got to pummel you around, and you just got to do whatever they say. And neither of those things, in my opinion, are true. Okay, the truth is there are jurisdictional boundaries. We accept that. The truth is coordination is the best way, in my mind, to handle this. Coordination means that if you come into the sheriff's county, that you let him know about it. You let him know about it for a bunch of reasons, namely safety. Okay, if the sheriff doesn't know people are in town that might be, taking aggressive action, then you know what? The sheriff might be putting his people in danger. citizens might be in danger because there's a lack of knowledge, the lack of clear direction and consistent coordination. And so I would submit to you that when somebody comes into your county from any other jurisdictional governmental institution or anything else, that they alert the sheriff that they're there, number one. And then number two, there ought to be a protocol that goes back and forth that says, hey, I appreciate you letting me know you're in my county, my jurisdiction, and what are you here for? And then they would say, well, we're here for this reason. And then the sheriff would say, you know what, I appreciate that. Let's sit down at the table and talk about it. I got to make sure that if you're here to do this and this and this and this, that you, number one, are following the law, because that's my job, to uphold the law in this county. And so I want to make sure that you guys are, not only are following the law, but then I want to make sure you have all the dots, the I's dotted and T's crossed and everything else to make sure that it's legitimate, that, you know what, you've got your ducks in a row, so to speak. You've got everything squared away, and that, you know, if you want this, you've got the judge's signature, and that you've gone through the proper procedures, and that you've done your due dilly, if you will, due diligence on the thing. And I'm going to make sure of that. And then after that, we'll talk about what the appropriate remedy is. If you're here legally and lawfully and appropriately for a reason, great, we can discuss that. And then we want to discuss the downstream actions that you propose to take. And we want to make sure that the actions fit the crime or the so-called issue. That, you know, and so if you, let's say, want to come to Sam Bushman's house, and let's just pretend that I'm in Houston County for a second. You know, Sam and Randy are friends. We know each other. Randy knows Sam and his family in general. And the idea is, hey, you want to come in and kick in Sam's door because his wife has a student loan that whatever, and it isn't paid or whatever the example is. And by the way, I give you this example because it's real. In California, they literally kicked in a guy's door because his wife didn't have her student loan caught up. Well, she didn't even live with him anymore. They were separated, and they literally yanked him out of his house and beat him up and made him wait for hours, only to find out that it was his wife's student loan, not even his. And okay, and they kicked in his door, and they did all these things. Absolutely out of control. I bring that up, though, because you could sit down with him and say, you know what, look, I can just call Sam and we can talk about this, okay? Or whatever. It seems to me that if we know our constituents, if we work together, if we do a little bit of due diligence ahead of time in terms of coordination and about making sure that everything is in a row, and couldn't this solve a lot of problems where we hear all over the news that, hey, the wrong house got their door kicked in and that happened and all these things are going on, and the sheriff doesn't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole because it's too political. And anyway, I go down this road, right? But coming back to this, Sheriff, I think that we could go a long way towards creating trust between the people and the, I don't want to say law enforcement, but and the sheriff and the peace officers that serve them, Randy Hargrove, Sheriff. Don't you think that would make all the difference in the world? Is that an unreasonable proposal by an average citizen, which I am?
No, it is not, Sam, and you're absolutely right. The sheriff, he is the protector of the people of his county. And I think anything that's done in that county as far as law enforcement, no matter the agency that performs it, it needs to be checked by a standard. And that standard is our Constitution, such as probable cause. Do we have probable cause to do what we do? Have we got a warrant signed by a judge? Are we being protected in our possessions and our papers? Who's the one to protect that? And that's the county sheriff.
We also need to ask if due process has happened. I've got an example in my county where the IRS literally came. They came with 175 kind of SWAT people, whatever you want to say. They literally had a battering ram on this guy's porch. They literally demanded the people come out with their hands up. They thought it was going to be a big old meltdown. The only person that was there was his wife. Okay, there were arms in the house, but she was unarmed, and she came willingly, and there was no issues. But they had this big show force. They even had, like, choppers in the sky or whatever else for this thing. And I'm just saying, look, the sheriff could have known this guy. He's a well-known filmmaker in the community. This guy's not. I mean, it's just insane. I bring this up because it seems to me that all you got to ask if you're sheriff for those coming into your county is, you know what, there's due process here. Is there an ongoing court case? And if there is, that's not completely adjudicated, it's easy to say due process as we need to wait. Is that reasonable?
That's very reasonable, Sam. And I've seen that happen myself. It's wrong. I think that we forget that the oath that we take, and that, again, is to protect the people, again, to measure what we do in our county and in our jurisdictions by the Constitution. If we keep failing to do that, we're going to lose what we have. It's very important to me that I'm at this conference this weekend. It's been an eye opener for me. It's caused me to rethink some of the things that we do and the way we do it. The Constitution is first. It's just first. It is the supreme law of the land. And regardless, without due process, without probable cause, I have no authority to do anything contrary to that Constitution.
Now, a lot of people say the CSPOA is radical. We're anti-government. We think the sheriff's a godlike figure, and the sheriffs can just do whatever they want to do. And okay, you've been to the CSPOA conference. What do you say to that allegation by the mainstream press?
That's completely false. This is educating our sheriffs about our Constitution, about our oaths of office, about our duty to serve our people in our counties and in our jurisdictions. They have to have that defender, and that defender is the sheriff and his deputies. There's a whole lot more to law enforcement, Sam, than cuffing and stuffing people and writing tickets and generating revenue. I tell you, like I said, this has been a real eye-opener for me to ask myself the question, what am I really here for? Why am I really wearing this badge and this gun? Is it so I can execute laws, or is it so I can protect the people of my county? And I say to you, it's the second.
I look at a sheriff as kind of like a fully informed jury. Are you familiar with fully informed juries? You know, the idea of a fully informed jury is to judge the law as well as the case before them, right? So if the law says this, and it turns out that I am guilty of the law, that I broke the law, but you would say the law is an unjust law, it's not fair, the idea would be a fully informed jury would say, listen, we're going to let this citizen go because it's the last defense they have. This is a law that ought to never been. And I look at that in the example of Larvita Farquhar. You know what? There shouldn't be some edict from some bureaucrat governor that says you can't open your restaurant, or you got to force people to wear masks, or you got to do this and that. So if I was on the fully informed grand jury, for example, if that case became before me, I would say, look, the law is bogus. It's not even the proper legislative branch. It's pretend legislation. I'm going to reject that. I, as the jury, I'm going to let Larvita go because I don't believe the law is just or right or fair or honorable from the get-go. And I kind of look at the sheriff that way as well. And then, you know, they would say, well, you think the sheriff could just obey some laws and not obey other laws? Yeah, I think the sheriffs and the police do that all the time.
Sure they do.
Okay, so do I think that they can just reject laws they don't like? No, not exactly. But I do think that they have the opportunity and the obligation to try to look at the moral law, to try to look at God's law, and to use their moral compass to reject laws that conflict with people's rights, laws that conflict with protecting people, laws that conflict with the supreme law of the land, and I think they have a duty to do so.
We absolutely
is that reasonable?
You bet. We absolutely do have a duty. It is a duty. It's also an honor for me to be able to stand and say, this law is unconstitutional, but it's been measured by the Constitution of the United States and of our state, and even though someone has passed it, it is not, it's not enforceable because it's unconstitutional. Kind of the same way with the orders and the mandates and stuff handed down by governments to say that we have to wear a mask and that kind of thing. Where's the probable cause in that? I don't think there is any.
Well, there's this term called victimless crimes, right?
Exactly.
And I don't know that there's a such thing as a victimless crime. Right? Is there a victimless crime?
A victimless crime, you know, the person that stands accused has the right to confront.
Yeah, Hank Tide, we'll talk a little bit more about this. This is an important point. Can you stay there with me a little longer?
You bet.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about Houston County Sheriff Randy Hargrove. This is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You
USA Radio News.
The ayes have it when it comes to the pandemic relief bill. The House Saturday morning passing the American Rescue Plan by just 7 votes. West Virginia Republican Carol Miller among those opposing the almost $2 trillion bill.
Let's cut the bull. The $1.9 trillion payout doesn't crush COVID, nor does it create jobs. Our grandchildren should not be saddled with the cost of the bag of bailouts.
The bill includes $1,400 stimulus checks for Americans who make less than $75,000 a year. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the bill's passage means help is on the way. The bill now goes to the Senate. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says the bill's passage means the swamp is back. McCarthy may expand on those comments today at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference in Florida. McCarthy and South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem among those to speak today on day 2 of the conference. This is USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Alaroot for our newest sponsor, Asset Strategies, or ASI for short. ASI is a precious metals powerhouse. They sell gold and silver. Never in history has there been a more important moment to buy gold and silver. ASI has been in business for 39 years. They've served over 20,000 clients and sold $5 billion worth of gold, silver, and precious metals with zero complaints. Last year, gold saw gains of 25%. Silver nearly doubled gold's performance. Now Democrats are in charge. Green New Deal, open borders, free healthcare for illegals, bailout broke cities and states. The debt is about to go through the stratosphere. The time to buy is now. The owners of ASI, Michael and Rich Chekin, have been my close personal friends for 16 years. ASI is the company I trust when it comes to buying and selling precious metals. Call now to receive a free consultation and a free 1 ounce silver eagle with every qualifying purchase when you mention the Wayne Alaroot Show. Call 800-831-0007. That's 800-831-0007. Or visit assetstrategies.com.
CPAC getting underway in Orlando Friday. Senator Josh Hawley using his time to call out big tech for censoring speech on its platforms. Here's Tim Berg.
CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, is continuing in Orlando. Missouri Republican Senator Josh Hawley on cancel culture.
The last 6 weeks, the radical left, their corporate allies, the liberal media, have tried to cancel me, censor me, expel me, shut me down, stop me from representing the people of Missouri, stop me from representing you, and guess what? I'm here today, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm not backing down. Not a chance. Not a chance.
Former President Donald Trump giving the keynote address at CPAC on Sunday. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Hawley and other CPAC speakers also discussing illegal immigration as border crossings rise. According to reports yesterday, the Biden administration plans to open a new tent facility in Texas to accommodate the new arrivals. This is USA Radio News.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Sheriff Randy Hargrove with us, Sheriff of Houston County, Texas. We're kind of mentioning this due process of law and protecting the people and fully informed juries, and we're discussing a lot of stuff, Randy.
You bet. It's great, Sam.
All right, let's finish up and then let you fly. I know you're busy and you want to get back to the conference, but really quick before I let you go, how do we educate not only sheriffs across the country and how do we educate the people? Because it really takes both to work together. We can't have people just belligerent, saying the sheriff has to do whatever the feds tell him or whatever. We also can't have the opposite where, they just think the sheriff can do everything he wants anywhere, anytime. Hey, arrest everybody that I don't like kind of thing. And there's a balance. How do we provide that education?
We do have to have a balance of power, Sam, and that is done through educating the public. Town hall meetings would be great. We have some people that would do that. But I found that most people in my county, believe it or not, like Facebook. And so if we can spark an interest on social media, maybe we can get them to a meeting. And they need to know that, the government works for them. They don't work for the government. And same with me. I answer to the voters of my county. And I want to be able to, when I lay down at night, I want to be able to know that I've done my part in protecting their rights.
God bless Sheriff Hargrove. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
There he goes, doing a phenomenal job, ladies and gentlemen. We've got all kinds of guests here. I just don't even know that I can bring all of them to your attention on the radio, but I've got some that are just phenomenal. We're going to move from Randy Hargrove Sr., Sheriff of Houston County, Texas, that doesn't even have Houston in it, to now former Rockwell County Sheriff Harold Evanson. And he is a former sheriff, retired from sheriff, I guess, but he's still active and involved. And he's co-chair of the, the Texas Border Security Committee. Is that right, sir?
No, sir.
Okay, you got to flip up your mic. There's a button on it. There you go.
Okay.
Go ahead, sir, and talk straight into your mic, if you will.
I'm co-chair of the National Sheriff's Association Border Security Committee.
Okay, the National Association Sheriff's Border Committee.
Correct.
And you're the co-chair. And how did you get that position from being a sheriff? How'd you move into that?
Well, I've had that position for about 7 or 8 years.
So even when you were sheriff?
Do what?
Yeah, that's even when you were the sheriff?
Yes. When I was sheriff, I was also appointed as co-chair of the Border Security Committee. And the chairman of that committee is a sheriff from Cochise County, Arizona, Mark Daniels.
Yes, okay, who we know. That's great. And then, so tell me about the Border Security Committee and stuff like that. I know you guys had a pretty good relationship with President Trump, right?
Yeah, we had a great relationship with President Trump. We met the executive committee of the National Sheriff's Association, met with President Trump twice, 2017 and again in 2018.
And have you had a chance to develop a relationship with Joe?
When I was on the executive committee moving up to the president's chair, we met with then Vice President Joe Biden twice, I think 2013, 2014. And how that works is a staffer from the White House will contact the National Sheriff's Association executive director about wanting to meet with the executive committee. And then the executive director will advise the staffer what we would like to talk about, the issues we'd like to talk about. And then in Vice President Biden's case, the staffer got back with our executive director and told him what he was willing to talk about, and it wasn't necessarily what we wanted to talk about. And with President Trump, there were no restrictions. We talked about the issues that were important to sheriffs and that we needed help on.
So define restrictions for a second then, so I understand. Meaning that you can only bring up certain things or you can only...
Give you an example. We wanted, one of the things we wanted to talk about was border security, but Vice President Biden that was not one of the issues he was willing to talk to us about.
And is that something that is typically done where you just say... We're going to talk, but we're going to kind of restrict or define what we're going to discuss or whatever? Or is it an open conversation typical? Which president's more in the norm?
Well, like I said, there were no restrictions in regard to what we wanted to talk about when we met with President Trump.
Which is what I would think would be normal, right?
That is correct, yes. That's what we should be able to do, but we were not able to do that with the Vice President Biden.
And you're, I guess, then a little bit skeptical that it's going to change now.
I think we're going to go from a border security standpoint, and that's one of the most important things that we're dealing with in this country. And the first responsibility of government is the protection of its citizens. And with open borders, they cannot accomplish that.
So it seems to me that the sheriffs, especially states along the border, but sheriffs in general, especially with the National Association of Sheriffs or the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, both organizations, it seems like you'd be able to approach this with the Vice President and or now President Joe. You would think that you would be able to discuss this from a national security point of view. I don't see how that can be off the table, sir.
I'm hoping you're right, but I'm skeptical to think that that will happen.
Is there anything we, the citizens, can do or we, the CSPOA, can do to help increase our chances? Because, I mean, I don't see how you can avoid that discussion.
Yes, that's a key point. I think the key point for this country is for the citizens to speak out and address issues that are of concern to them. And I can't think of hardly anything that is of greater concern to our country. When you have open borders, you're destined to have problems. There's just no way around it, and it puts a tremendous amount of strain on the infrastructure of those border sheriffs. But it doesn't just stop there. Those illegals that come into our country end up in, no telling, you know, 40, 45 states. They go all over the country.
And they go all over the country, sadly, not just on their own, but sadly, we facilitate that. We use government taxpayer dollars to kind of deposit them around the country and really, you know, in a way, participate, right?
That's correct.
And, can it be stopped?
Well, if the only way it can be stopped, if the citizens of this country speak out enough and long enough to the right people, maybe we can turn the tide. That's what it will take to make that happen. And the National Sheriff's Association has been very active in regard to what their position is on border security. The Texas sheriffs have a border security group, and the Southwest border sheriffs, you know, meaning Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, the Southwest Border Sheriffs Coalition, and they've been very vocal in regard to the importance of border security.
All right. Is this something that, you know, a lot of people want you to just believe that this is a political difference between Republicans and Democrats or a Biden and a Trump, and that Trump's a little bit intense on the border and a little extreme, and, hey, we need to be more kind to the immigrants, and it's a racial discussion and everything else. To me, that's all the watering down that the mainstream press does in bed with politicians with agendas. Okay, to me, Sheriff, or former Sheriff, I should say, I'll just call you Sheriff, right? To me, it seems like this is not a debate of left, right, Republican, Democrat, and how you feel about immigration. This is a national security discussion. Okay, if I can't even get on the plane, or my wife can't get on the plane, say, with sewing scissors, little teeny scissors about as big as your fingernail, designed to cut thread because, by golly, they could be a danger. But yet we're going to let the border leak like a sieve and have no idea what crosses our border. And then we're going to assist these people and deposit these people, whether they have gang affiliations or you know, Muslim kind of affiliation or whatever you want to say, to the point where it could create danger to the country. I don't see how the two can be. I don't even get the discussion almost, right?
Well, if you have open borders, you're going to have some percentage of the people that come into our country that are actually coming in here to better their lives, to get jobs. But when you have open borders, you also have people that come in our case, since we've got the pandemic now, and if they're not properly screened for COVID-19 or any other contagious disease, they cause a major problem with the infrastructure of our hospitals. And also, there's a potential that they can affect our citizens. And then, worst of all, if they're able to come in, then so are the terrorists that would want to do us harm. And I have no doubt that we've got people in our country that are here for that purpose because of open borders of the past.
Can sheriffs start arresting those who allow these people to be distributed without being vetted across the country?
Well, obviously, the sheriffs on the border and sheriffs all over this country encounter those people that commit crimes that are here illegally, and there is documented, no telling how many cases, where people that have come into our country with criminal histories in the countries that they came here from have committed heinous crimes against the citizens of this country.
But the American government or leaders who allow this to occur seem to be, what do they call it, complicit in the crime?
Yeah, they are. Open borders is a recipe for disaster for this country.
I got to wonder if we ought to be harder on those who allow it and can enable it to continue.
Well, the best way to do that is to vote them out of office, and that's what we need to do.
All right, stay there, sir. Quick pause. Liberty Roundtable live in seconds.
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march, that is why we pray, and that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's advanced distance education program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio, former Rockwall County Sheriff. Harold Evanson with us. He's co-chair, Border Security Committee, National Sheriff's Association, NSA, if you will. What got you familiar with the CSPOA conferences, Sheriff?
Beg your pardon?
What got you familiar with the CSPOA conferences?
Well, I've known about the CSPOA for quite some time. I've had brief conversation with Sheriff Mack, so
yes.
I've probably been aware of the CSPOA organization for 6, 7, 8, 10 years.
All right, fantastic. Well, we appreciate your attendance this time. Tell me about the NSA. Are they strong enough on the border, too, the National Sheriff's Association? Are they really willing to throw down and get after this? Because I kind of feel like somebody needs to step up a little harder against an administration that's lackadaisical about national security issues, sir.
Well, I don't disagree with you, and I think the National Sheriff's Association has been proactive in regard to addressing the issues that affect sheriffs all over this country. We've been very active in that area.
All right, because I think we need to kind of step it up and get the people involved here, too. I think the people don't like their businesses being, concerned about their businesses or private property or all these things, ranches along the borders. And I guess what I'm saying is I think we need to really get the people into this fight and kind of shame the mainstream press into telling the tale.
Well, your point made me recall a meeting that I had in Arizona when I met with the border sheriffs, and we met with probably 7, 8, 10 ranchers, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th generation ranchers. I have talked with all of the border sheriffs, the majority of the border sheriffs in my 20 years as sheriff, and my affiliation with the National Sheriff's Association, one of those years as president of the National Sheriff's Association. I have yet to talk to a border sheriff or a border rancher, that is in favor of open borders.
I think that the American people, if you kind of explain the national security issues, et cetera, I think 99% of the American people would be against open borders.
Everybody that I've talked with that understands the danger of open borders concur with our position.
All right, Vice President of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. He's a former police officer himself. His name is Rick Dalton. And he spoke yesterday about asset forfeiture. And I think this is kind of a hot topic. Basically Rick saying, hey, you know what? Asset forfeiture has to stop. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. I do totally agree with him that we should not be policing for profit. One of the greatest threats that we face in this country is drugs, and the cartels in Mexico are the supplier of those drugs. And we have a 8-county sheriff's organization in North Texas called the North Texas Criminal Interdiction Unit, and their focus is on and has been since 2017 the major traffickers bringing narcotics into this country. I do agree that there are some police agencies out there that take advantage of the civil seizure process, but the North Texas Criminal Interdiction Unit does not operate in that manner. We follow the rules. We confiscate the major traffickers' drugs, and our first priority is the drugs. And if we happen to get lucky enough to knock off one of their loads of money, the drugs go north, the money comes south. And anytime we catch anyone with drugs, there is a criminal case filed. And what he was making reference to yesterday was using the civil asset forfeiture to seize people's property and not filing a criminal case. And I agree with him on that point.
So how do you strike a fine line? Because I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is, hey, listen, you know what? If we can capture the money or capture some of their ability to, launch their drug trade and carry it forward, et cetera, and they've got vehicles and or assets that allow them to accomplish this, hey, one of the great ways to strike at them and stop this is to make sure that we prevent them from continuing to have their assets and their finances grow. So I get that. I understand your point. At the same time, I kind of say, hey, how do we strike a fine line between it being abused versus it being maybe legitimately used in a meaningful way? How do we make sure that due process kind of takes the cake first? I mean, no matter what, somebody deserves due process of law, deserves a, you know, jury, deserves, you know, what I mean is there's constitutional protections there. And how do we not violate those constitutional protections while at the same time, you know what, your fundamental point has value, right?
Well, if we use the model that we created when we established our criminal interdiction unit, and we've had sheriff's offices from other states come in and look at our criminal interdiction unit and are entertaining the thought of creating one like ours and using ours as a model. But we're not after the mom and pop. We're not out there to take somebody's $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 away from them. That thought would never enter our mind. We're after the major traffickers, and since 2017, we have confiscated. This unit has confiscated over $90 million in drugs, made over 200 felony arrests, two of those for capital murder, and rescued two young minors. That were clearly the victims of trafficking. And the other thing, the cartels are not just involved in drug trafficking. They're involved in human trafficking, so they are a threat to us, and we should be concerned about stopping those agencies that are not doing it the right way. But we cannot forget about the cartel. We cannot do that.
I agree we can't forget about the cartel. What about an idea, for example, the Arizona House passed a bill to require criminal conviction first, to say, you know what, hey, if you've been convicted of this crime and everything else, then maybe you can go for the stuff.
Right.
But otherwise, there's due process here. There's all kinds of constitutional restrictions. I get the desire and the need, but I also get the due process of law and the conviction first. And what do you say to that?
Okay, I'm going to give an example of why I don't think that's a good idea. There, about 7, 8, 9 years ago, there was a state highway patrolman in a county in Texas that stops a truck, tractor, semi-trailer and finds 2,900 pounds of marijuana on that truck, tractor, semi-trailer. It had compartments designed to haul dope and money. He filed the criminal case on the 2,900 pounds of marijuana. Then he files a civil asset forfeiture case to seize that truck, tractor, semi-trailer. The subject driving the truck bonded out of jail, and when his court date was due, he did not show up for trial. So therefore, there was no possibility of ever getting a conviction on him, which would have prevented them from seizing that truck, tractor, semi-trailer. And what would have happened to that truck, tractor, semi-trailer had the state of Texas not successfully seized it? It might very well have gone back to the cartel.
Now, hold on a minute. Why couldn't you prosecute this guy? Because he flees?
Well, if he don't show up, you can't prosecute him.
If he doesn't show up, who's going to claim the truck?
The state of Texas filed the civil asset forfeiture to seize that truck.
No, I understand, but is the truck in the name of this individual that fled?
It was an instrument in a drug trafficking enterprise.
No, I understand, but I'm saying somebody would have to come pick up the truck if it's been impounded or whatever, right?
That's true.
So whoever comes to pick up the truck, you say, hey, we're not releasing the truck until we can, you know, whose truck is this? And
can't make a criminal case on that guy who comes to pick it up because he wasn't involved in the process at the time that the arrest was taken.
But is the truck in his name?
Well, I don't know the answer to that.
Anyway, what I'm trying to get at is that, let's say that it was my truck. And I don't know if it was stolen or whatever else, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is that we need to trace these items back to the people that own them. And if they're literally involved in crime, then they should be prosecuted for the involvement in the crimes.
If you could connect them to it, that would be possible. But you would have to make that connection because they're deserving of due process as well.
That's right. And so that's kind of what I'm saying is if I have an asset, due process would say if you're going to strip me of my asset, or, you know, then you need to create that connection. And if you can't, I'm not defending drug dealers here.
What I am saying is
that there's this kind of thou shalt not steal idea.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
All right. Would that truck was an instrument in an illegal enterprise hauling 2,900 pounds of marijuana?
Yes.
Would you rather the state of Texas take that truck that was an instrument in a criminal enterprise, or let it possibly go back to the people that orchestrated that to begin with? Which would you prefer?
If there's only A or B, then of course I'd prefer that we stop it. However, I submit that there's C, which is to develop ways to track that. Somebody's going to come pick up that asset. If they don't come pick it up, then you're not forfeiting it. They're just not claiming it, right?
Well,
there's a difference. Secondly, if somebody comes and picks it up and they can be drawn to be the owner of that vehicle, then you can trace where that vehicle's been used or who it's with, and you can eventually tie maybe greater knowledge about upstream people. A lot of times they roll people in drug criminal cases to where they find their crime boss and everything else. A lot of times this could be used actually to your advantage to get higher people in the organization over time if you were to trace these details rather than just seize the property, right?
If you could link them to that enterprise, you could file a criminal case on them, but you have to make that link.
Yes, and in my opinion, for due process to happen, that link needs to be made, right?
If it's possible to make, yes.
And if it's not possible to make, they can't claim the vehicle, right?
That's correct. Then the state of Texas ends up with it, and that's what happened. They got the state of Texas ended up with that truck.
But that wouldn't be asset forfeiture if they just didn't come and claim the truck.
Well,
do you see the difference?
That's a legal question.
I'm just saying, if I don't come claim my asset, then it's not asset forfeiture. You're not taking it from me or using the law to take it from me without due process. I'm just simply not claiming it. And the drug cartels don't want to come claim things because they don't want that link to start to happen. But I submit to you that if we do not commit asset forfeiture, then we have afforded due process to the citizens, whether that truck was stolen or not or used wrongfully. We need to put that.
Well, we would know, obviously, if the state of Texas would have known if that truck was stolen because there'd have been a stolen report made on it by somebody. And in this case, that truck was not reported stolen.
And do we know whose name it was in?
I don't know whose name it was in.
Yeah, anyway, all I'm saying is that we need to basically find those things out. Sometimes it might be stolen and somebody's just afraid to report it.
I'm sure that the arresting officer and the investigation established who that truck was titled to. I have no doubt that was the case.
And I hope that person received due process.
That person did receive due process. In Texas, there is a hearing on criminal asset forfeiture, and there is a hearing on civil asset forfeiture. So there is due process. Whoever was representing the owner of that truck had the opportunity to explain to the court why they felt like that truck should be returned to them, but the ruling was not in their favor.
I understand. And I'm not here to dispute court rulings. I am here, though, to make sure that we walk a very fine line. I think it's going to take a lot of work on both sides to craft a policy that makes sense and that does afford and protect due process while at the same time stopping criminals. I think the more we work on it together as a team, And not look at, you know, one side or the other, but we work on it together, the greater chance we have of creating success and stability in our system, sir.
I don't disagree with your point. I think we must always follow the line of protecting the citizens' rights without...
We're flat out of time, Sheriff. Thanks so much.
...without giving the advantage to the cartel.
God save the Republic.
Yeah.